This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
A new podcast and video series with Ahval, Old and New Turkey. That's the title. And my guest and my permanent guest will be Professor Gökhan Bacık. Gökhan, welcome.
My pleasure, Yavuz. Nice to see you, as always.
Nice to see you too, Gökhan. Professor Bacık teaches in the Department of Politics and European Studies at Palaki University, Czech Republic. And Ahval Turkish followers know him for a long time for his writings and also for his commentary on subjects like the Middle East, Islam and politics, Islamism, and Turkish politics. So we have an expert, ladies and gentlemen, to discuss what is really happening behind the scenes and under the surface in Turkish society, in Turkish state structures, in Turkey's administrative policies, especially with the focus on religion, because Turkish politics currently for a long time is mingled, mixed with religion deeply. So this is what we are going to discuss beginning from today with Professor Bacık. Let's start with the latest discussions about the constitution, which President Erdogan, out of the blue, some weeks ago, proposed to the society, to the debate, that we need a new constitution, and this is time to discuss it, to debate it. So I think the first and major issue is why today and these times Erdogan suddenly called for a new constitution.
I think it's mainly about his failure in economy. Even the topic is constitution, we should understand it with a special reference to economy. As a quite charismatic populist leader, Erdogan is the master of what I may call as culture politics. He's doing it very well in the last 5 years, maybe since his beginning of office. But in the last 3 years, there's
master of engineering as well, sociology and politics as well.
It's invincible in cultural politics. But now Erdogan is in trouble, especially in the last, let's say, 5 years, mainly because of economy. I think he's trying to create, or I should say invent, a kind of, let's say, a fluctuation within politics, which may, hoping that, enable him to fulfill this populist agenda. In other words, he's hoping that this idea, the based on constitution, which is because popular, all time popular, this topic in Turkey, it's not about this, you know, since 1980, we have been discussing about, had discussions about is the idea of drafting a new constitution. So he hoped that this may enable him inventing a new trajectory which doesn't directly connect with economy, marginalizing economy, which I believe complete virtually impossible. But of course, this is not such simple. As I said earlier, drafting new constitution is an all-time popular topic, and he's hoping that major parties may, you know, put some attraction to that. This is, you know, they can engage with that discussion. And in so doing, he can also punch the weak spot of the opposition, that is the Kurdish issue. In these days, as far as I understand, the math of Turkish politics is very simple. It is mainly about Erdogan's plan to destroy, if destroying is not possible, to weaken the opposition. Because we know that the connection between Kemalist CHP and E Party is strong, comparatively strong, but whereas it is quite weak when it comes to connection between Kurdish Party HDP and the other main parties, the three major parties. Even the opposition bloc is composed of several parties. We are talking mainly three pillars, major parties. So it's just like the rationale in boxing. So Erdogan is constantly trying to punch the weak spot in the opposition. So he's hoping that the debate around the constitution will help him to make people forget economy a little bit and setting the agenda. And on the other hand, he hoped that it may create a kind of new discussion where the connection between Kurdish party and the other two major parties might be easily weakened.
Mm-hmm. So per se, the constitution, let's debate the constitution, is not primarily about discussing and trying to reach a consensus, but it's an instrument. It's a tool.
Absolutely, I agree. First of all, we should...
It's not an end, it's the means.
That's right, because it's very simple, because Erdogan cannot normalize right now. Because, of course, Turkey has objective reasons to debate a new constitution. I mean, in terms of Kurdish question, secularism, democratic, Turkish constitution has a lot of problems and deficits, no doubt. And on this regard, I accept that there are objective reasons. But whereas the case of Erdogan is completely different, he's pragmatist. His approach to constitution is trying to instrumentalize that. So, and virtually, logically speaking, you can't expect authoritarian leader to initiate a drafting a new constitution, which will be hoping that the better. Maybe from that perspective, he's also hoping that the constitution will be something to help him amending the electoral law, also which he desperately needs. And it's not a secret, it's been almost a year. He's and pro-government pundits are speculating about that Turkey needs a new electoral law, which enable Erdogan always winning the majority somehow in the parliament as well. And also, maybe Erdogan is hoping to formalize, because he also imagined himself as a historical leader, which Islamized Turkey, then let's have our constitution, okay? Now this is new Turkey, and which will be, okay, culminated with a new constitution. So I don't see that the real intention behind this debate is the objective reasons, okay? That is why he's talking about human rights, and many people are, I'm a bit surprised because why people are questioning why he's using human rights, because within this context, it's very clear that even different actors speak Turkish, they refer to different political discourse. Erdogan is absolutely using here human rights as an Islamist. It does so it's not an it's not an inconsistency for him. So he doesn't feel himself in an inconsistent position. In the same case, for example, they are trying to in this regard using this Islamization strategy without using Islamist jargon. That is why we frequently observe that pro-government guys using culture. For example, Anatolian culture doesn't allow LGBT rights and so forth. So there are different rationale behind this, but absolutely it is another instrumental agenda, setting the political agenda, because Erdogan is lagging behind, mainly because of economy. So on this account, we shouldn't forget that if we analyze Turkish politics as a whole, there is only one fixed and objective dynamic that shapes politics, its economy.
Yes, that's obvious. But going back again, what you said, it's interesting. I said Erdogan is speaking about human rights because he's an Islamist, or have I gotten it wrong?
Yeah, yes.
Well, can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by that?
Well, reading the literature, there is an idea in academic and even some distinguished journalists that Erdogan is a pragmatist, which is correct. But pragmatism doesn't mean that he's not an Islamist. So if I'm asked to define Erdogan, even if he is pragmatist, he's first an Islamist, which means that if you look carefully at Erdogan's narrative, actually you should analyze him in a double narrative. One, the narrative, the public narrative, but the second narrative he uses when he's speaking with his own constituency, his party, his followers. You can better observe the Islamist tone when it comes to that level narrative. So Erdogan is Islamist. But the point is, the Turkish public is giving mixed signals about Islam. So on the one hand, they welcome Islam, but when you question them based on some surveys, they don't welcome the idea of Sharia. So it is a matter of packaging Islam, and Erdogan is doing it in the way of culture. Okay, this is Turkish culture. That's why they keep using the constitution part of human rights reform. It's just like, imagine you are going to Iran speaking pro-government mullah and asking the state of women in Iran. They would say that, of course, there are women rights in Iran, but within the context of religion. So the problem in Turkey is we have secular nationalist Islamist actors using the same concepts such as democracy, human rights, but they don't understand the same thing. So what is human rights for Erdogan is, of course, not a human rights as we know in Europe.
As perceived by his opponents, main
right,
opposition.
That allows him using that jargon freely. So you see, we question how come he used such terms easily while Turkey is authoritarian, but this is a kind of linguistic chaotic situation. So he's not referring human rights as we refer. That's why they are doing this mostly from the narrative of culture. Here, unfortunately, Turkish political culture helps a lot Erdogan.
The interesting part is maybe that's a very a legitimate, valid question now, with the very proposal that Erdogan came out, it's time to discuss a new constitution. He keeps repeating that. But do you think there's a logic in that he has something in mind, which is, okay, the slow motion Islamization of Turkey has reached a certain point that it is now, time is ripe for sort of, converging this slow motion Islamization with a new constitution concept, because he sees that there are possibilities in the conservative religious Islamist nationalist flank of the major flank. Of course, it's an overwhelmingly powerful flank of Turkish politics and electorate. Is there any logic in that?
Well, at a point, I will be surprised, because as far as I read the Islamist actors, their link to Sharia is never dead, okay? So if you analyze the intellectual kitchen behind Islamic actors in Turkey, those people who inspire Islamism, there is a constant positive reference to Sharia. But I'm not sure if it is the time, but there is a risk here. Even not making Sharia part of Islamic law, again, using the cultural narrative, Erdogan may convince MHP. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there is a possibility.
So out of an Islamist agenda.
That's right.
What you're saying?
Because even based on surveys, Turkish people still don't buy the idea of Sharia as law. But there is also idea which welcomes somewhat recognizing Islam, okay? So Islam part of, let's say, how to name it, legal system. So I don't think that the drafting new constitution will end up recognizing Sharia as the law or a source of law. But I wouldn't be surprised if Erdogan comes up with an idea, at least the constitution recognizing Islam as a cultural motive, which is the case in many other countries. So this is an idea which Islamists wouldn't be unhappy about that. Mm. But when it comes to your question, it requires a bit more complicated answer. I think we should analyze Islamization in Turkey on three levels. The first is the legal level, which is the per se Islamization. If it happens, we take it as textbook case of Islamization, as the case in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, for example. On this level, we have not observed any Islamization in Turkey, since 2001. So legally speaking, Erdogan so far has not introduced any Islamic law. But there are other levels. The second level is actor level Islamization. There is no doubt we observe the strong, example of Islamization, because
His success is.
That's right.
As opposed to the first point that you are.
Right. All actors in Turkey are Islamist. And when I analyze carefully the guys appointed as judges or key positions within Ministry of Education, there is no doubt those people are Islamist guys. So Islamization is not only about legal procedure. You can Islamize society. For example, RTÜK, the higher council, which
Supreme Board of Radio and Television. Yes.
This is a perfect example of actor-based Islamization. When you read the decisions of RTÜK, you notice that most of the rationale are Islamic. For example, they refer to, again, family values, culture, but we know that these are mainly because of Islamic. The third criteria level is whether a society is becoming Islamic. I think on this level, we are receiving, again, mixed signals. There is no doubt Turkish society is more Islamic, but I think we shouldn't also confuse visibility of religion and religiosity. This is also a point for seculars. In Turkey, seculars made a historic mistake and they misunderstood visibility of religion as per se religiosity, which is not the case. And even if we compare some advanced societies like US and UK, visibility sometimes may help secularism, because religious people may feel that they are not under secular threat, their symbols are welcome. So visibility might be good in the Turkish case. And this, on this level, another problem is there is no doubt we have a religious people, but this is new religiosity, especially young people. They are religious, but based on my research, I noticed that, for example, for many of these young people, having a boy or girlfriend is not a big problem at all. And more critically, what I observe part of this debate on Islamization, there is no effective dialogue between first-generation Islamic actors and the young generation. Let me give you an example. For example, there is a, let's say, this arc symbol of old school Islamist Ozan Asiltürk, who dominates Saadet Partisi, the Virtue Party, but you never imagine him being able to speak young people. So there is a huge gap. So they cannot speak with that. It's a big threat for Erdogan. So on the legal level and society level, I don't think Erdogan has been successful. But the problem is on the second level, actors level, no doubt Turkey is Islamic. There are many people working at different important levels. They are ruling the relevant body of government or official authority according to Islamic principles. That's not a secret.
What about institutional level? How far has Erdogan and his team come in terms of Islamization of the sort of traditional established republican institutions of Turkey? I think this is an area where, you know, all the outside monitors, actors, observers are looking or trying to look carefully into.
Well, this is a billion-dollar question, but I mean, of course, Turkish state is composed of many institutions, but by definition, in this regard, we should look at the army, the judiciary, and I think we should wait for about that. I mean, hypothetically speaking, we should. I would say that Erdogan will not spare these institutions, okay? Mm-hmm. Especially based on his experience with the Gulen movement. And we all know that authority in Turkey is about infiltration. Unfortunately, in Turkey, historically speaking, even including Kemalism, bureaucracy is shaped by infiltration, not a kind of fair competition. It never happened in Turkey. It's mainly because of the Turkey's failure.
We have seen, for example, in 1950s, there was quite a visible infiltration by the Freemasons.
That's the point.
In security apparatus, political parties. Süleyman Demirel was himself part of a sort of semi-secretive Freemason structure. Anyway,
this is a Turkish, let's say, Alaturka survival mentality. So Erdogan is not apart from this story. So there is nothing surprising to observe that Erdogan also himself is directly dealing with some restructuring of key government bodies, including Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Central Bank, so on and so forth. So I won't be surprised. But here's the point. When we look at the historical background, even if you design this institution, it doesn't mean that you can control them forever. For example, the restructuring of military after 1970s, the military intervention, was designed to a large extent according to nationalistic values, especially in the army, but they later give birth to a very bizarre form of secularism during 1980 coup d'etat. So the exact or the correct answer to your question is it's very easy to detect that Erdogan is trying to redesign this institution, but what is the identity that those institutions, transformation in those institutions is now generating is a matter of time. We should wait to see, okay? So it's a matter of time. Probably within 5 or 6 years, we will be able to learn what is the new identity in a typical Turkish officer in the army or judiciary, for example, because we shouldn't forget that. There is one fact that makes transforming Turkish state difficult. It's a very crowded bureaucracy, millions of people. For example, let me give you some statistics. According to official numbers, there are almost 800,000 teachers working for Ministry of Education. And according to only official statistics, at least 250,000 of them belongs to nationalist union. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to move. And
what do you mean by nationalist movement?
Ultra-nationalist party.
Okay.
It is difficult to know, but
ultra-nationalist affiliates.
That's okay. Right. No, here's the case. There are unions for teachers. One of them is secular. The other is a bit Islamist. You know. So then, if we look at the union which is known as close to ultra-nationalist party, has around 250,000 members. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge number. So which you cannot easily change it. Then it's a coalition. So on the one hand, I know that Erdogan is trying to focus to redesign his institution, but it's not also easy. So it's also path dependent. But we should wait. It's a surprising. So we all will learn what is the new identity information, especially in the army, for example, or in judiciary. So it's on the one hand, it is inevitable, but on the other hand, it's not such easy.
Okay. Two more questions before we end this part of our chain of talks. The first one is, of course, something comes to mind. Again, back to the constitution proposal. Do you think we have any hints or signs that Erdogan if successful, may use the construction writing of a new constitution in order to take more strong control over the institutions by way of Islamization of them?
The case of Erdogan is very clear right now. He is in a path every time he needs more authoritarian, doing something in favor of authority, transform the system more authoritarian form. So even for Erdogan, a stable authoritarian regime is no longer possible, okay? Mm-hmm. And right now he's sharing power with ultranationalist party, which is also a great problem and a kind of headache for him. So probably, ideally speaking, the new constitution in Erdogan's mind, as I said in the very beginning of the session, that is formalizing this transition. Because Erdogan, when we analyze Turkey right now, we talk about economic problems, unemployment, but in Erdogan's mind, the scene is quite different. He believes that he brought Turkey to a historic, you know, success. Turkey becomes a leader, global leader. And he really believes in that. So he is looking for a new constitution to formalize his experience with Turkey or to formalize the changes he has done. So probably it will be a constitution which will allow the government machinery more saying in the parliament, making it much more difficult for small parties to make success in the parliament. So in his mind, there is no doubt that the executive presidency gives a lot of power to Erdogan, but there is a problem from another perspective. He's a lame duck because he cannot dominate the parliament because of the electoral system. So he is desperately looking for a mechanism, new electoral law, which will help them to stop any other small group to make impact in the parliament, destroying his majority. So I won't be surprised to see the new constitutional draft, which is designed to consolidate executive presidency even in the parliament. Even the Turkish parliament powers was seriously eroded. It's still living. It's there. And it is paralyzed mainly because of ultranationalist party. If MHP abandons Erdogan, then we don't know how going to happen. There's still, because constitutionally, the Turkish parliament has a huge potential. It's oppressed right now, but they have all the power. So once an executive president in Turkish system loses the majority in the parliament, we don't know what's going to happen. It might be a huge problem to Erdogan.
Mm-hmm. And the final question is, of course, you know, general outlook of it all. Is Turkish politics heading towards sort of a permanent state of sort of extreme conservative ultranationalist right, which Erdogan and Bahçeli are endlessly speaking about? Is that kind of a sort of permanent consolidation going on?
You mean in terms of societal transformation?
Societal transformation, as well as, you know, the sort of shaping of politics, political scene, political actors. Is that well, you know, what Erdogan is trying to do is basically expanding his efforts into his former self, which is national view. The Erbakan movement, et cetera, and also consolidating his ties with almost like unity of destiny with Bahçeli.
Yeah, well, there's a structural problem, as I said. Erdogan, not MHP. I think MHP can change its course anytime because there is no coalition. We use that word, which is a remnant of parliamentary system, but it's not a coalition. It's the gentleman agreement between Bahçeli and Erdogan. So tomorrow, MHP can change his mind. But for Erdogan, I don't think there is any opportunity left for him to change, because normalization for Erdogan is going to mean huge costs, such as losing the power. So I think for Erdogan, more authoritarianization is not only a matter of ideological choice. He must stay on this track. And what is more, maybe equally alarming for us, the level of authoritarianization is not determined by himself, by other problems such as economy. So if we have much more problems in economy, in employment, the only instrument Erdogan has to survive is increasing his authoritarianism. Mm. He is a political leader, especially since 1918, which is completely not able to generate any means to persuade people in peaceful way. In economy, in foreign policy, it's a disaster. I mean, foreign policy is not helping Turkey, not helping Turkish economy, in tourism, plus pandemic. So in case of encountering a problem, Erdogan has only one option, appealing authoritarianism. So maybe Islamism is a reason to explain that, but it's more than Islamism. Structurally, Erdogan is poised to become much authoritarian. It's a kind of automatic procedure. We know from other authoritarian examples, not only in Turkey, even Latin America, from Soviet experience.
Sure. Let's reverse the question. I said final question, but this is also important. Can Erdogan survive politically with the current constitution without any amendments?
As long as MHP stays with Erdogan, the math of Turkish politics is very easy. Because, as I said, even the executive presidency is perfect. I mean, for Erdogan's interest, is working very well. But there is a constitutional gap, potential gap. Okay, the gap is we don't know what happens if Erdogan is not able to control the majority of parliament, which means it may happen when MHP when abandons Erdogan. So my answer is, so long as he is able to dominate Turkish parliament, he can survive. I don't think there is any problem. That is why he's desperately trying to weaken the opposition. It's mainly because he's aware of the parliament's. So I should say that in terms of the practice, if I use that, Turkish parliament might be like Russian parliament, but in terms of its constitutional powers, it's still a sleeping giant. Okay, so the limit is very clear. As long as he keeps the control over parliament, the constitution is enough for Erdogan because with the executive presidency, he has a right to issue presidential decrees to create institutions. For example, he no longer needs the parliament. He can appoint anyone. He dismisses. Everything is okay. His problem is if he will be able to keep control over parliament, which makes him dependent on MHP, which is not a good for long-term process.
Professor Gökhan Bajık with Palaki University, Czech Republic. Thank you, Gökhan, for this conversation.
My pleasure.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.